KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have cloudy skies, 61 degrees. Temperature has been holding steady over the past few hours. We look forward to be mostly cloudy today, just a slight chance of any showers and thunderstorms at a high around 72. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. In the news, Atlantic Police Chief Fire Chief Mark McNeese this morning said the cause of a house fire that took place early Wednesday morning at 107 East 9th Street was determined to be accidental. An investigation at the scene by Chief McNeese and arson and fire investigator Paul Wood, as well as interviews conducted by the Atlantic Fire Department and Atlantic Police Department, determined that the blaze at around 3:20 a.m. Wednesday was caused by a lit candle coming into contact with furniture and papers in the residence. 64-year-old Rick Parrott was at home at the time of the blaze and was awakened by the flames surrounding his head after he fell asleep while reading a paper on a couch just inside the main entrance of the home. Parrott attempted to extinguish the blaze by using pillows, but the fire quickly spread, and he was forced out of the home by the heat and smoke. Parrott, who has mobility issues, then attempted to wake neighbors as the fire spread throughout the home. He continued to travel away from the scene to a friend's home with the intent to return by vehicle, but did not do so during the incident. McNeese said that Mr. Parrott was very fortunate to have escaped the blaze unharmed and were thankful of that. While it would have been very helpful to know he was safely out of the home, it's somewhat understandable that he was in shock and didn't make it back before we left, according to Mark. Police also, he said, established through relatives that he was not in the home during the time that they were on the scene. The results of the investigation matched the details of the incident, and the fire will be ruled accidental. McNeese cautioned residents that candles are one of the leading causes of home fires and should never be left unattended. The Atlantic City Council Wednesday evening tabled action on the first reading of an amended ordinance affecting the speed limit on a section of Sunnyside Lane. There is a 25-mile-per-hour speed limit currently posted from 10th Street to about 2,000 feet south of 10th. The remaining 1,700-foot stretch of road is unregulated, which was an oversight in planning or was left as for reasons unknown, according to City Administrator John Lund. If someone was speeding along that part of Sunnyside, a ticket would essentially be unenforceable because there is no posted speed limit. The amendment would change the entire length of Sunnyside from 10th to 22nd Street to 25 miles per hour, which Councilman Gerald Brink said is not necessary.
Why is it only 25 mile an hour to 22nd Street? You go on South Olive Street, it's 35. You go on South Chestnut, it's 35. Why is this 25? There's only two houses out there anyway. It's not residential.
Brink said the traffic on that section of Sunnyside is averaging about 40 miles per hour. Atlantic Police Chief Dave Erickson said the regulated section is 25 miles per hour because it runs by the pool, and there are hidden driveways along that stretch of road. Snyder and Associates engineer Dave Sturm explained how speed limits are set.
Generally, speeds are set by an 85th percentile speed study. Whatever 85% of the vehicles travel at or below is where you set your speed limits. From what I know about that road, that's probably, the terrain's probably not going to dictate that. There's very, you know, there's not like there's a sharp curve or anything. So I think the only way to give it an actual engineering opinion would be to do a speed study. I don't know that it's warranted in this case.
Councilperson Ashley Hayes was in favor of the 25-mile-per-hour limit for the entire road to 22nd Street.
I personally think 25 is just fine. It's a park. There are hidden driveways, as stated. There are children in that area.
Not down out there. The first 1,700 feet is 25 miles.
And also, that small amount of room, you're talking about a speed trap. That is not enough room for people to get from 35 and then drop down to 25 and knowingly do that.
Hayes said you see countless drivers slam on their brakes when they hit the 25-mile-per-hour zone because there is no speed limit coming north from 22nd Street. And she said she doesn't like the idea of having a partial speed limit on the section of the same street in question. A motion to approve the amended ordinance on the first reading failed by a vote of 5-2, with only Councilpersons Hayes and Jefferson voting in favor. The matter now goes back to the drawing board, according to Mayor Dave Jones. In other business, the mayor said the council would set the date for Halloween as October 31st during their next meeting, and he wanted the public to know the council will be discussing the raising of sewer rates.
People keep mowing the lawn in the streets and stuff, and they start clogging up the sewer, so they don't want to listen to us. We might have to look at either you just stop mowing stuff on the streets or you look at sewer rate increases.
Councilman Chris Jimerson, that is, added that grass clippings blown out into the street make it very dangerous for motorcycles, especially when that grass is wet. The Shelby County Auditor's Office yesterday released the names of candidates who have filed nomination papers for the November 6th general election. For county supervisor, there's one seat that'll be on the ballot, and two men are running for that, Republican Darren Hake and Democrat Roger Schmitz. For the county treasurer, recorder, and county attorney, there are Republicans running for those positions, one each. And county treasurer, Representative Republican Carolyn Bloom, county recorder is Geraldine Greer, and county attorney Marcus Gross, Jr., a Democrat, will be on the ballot. Other nonpartisan office candidates in Shelby County include for hospital trustee Kelly Clausen, Terry Tornayton, and James Zimmerman, all of Harlan. Shelby County Extension Council, Lane Boffman, Gwen Hansen, both of Kirkman, Renee Hansen, Lori Knudsen, and Jane Schmitz, all of Harlan, and Clara Veith of Elkhorn. And for the Soil and Water Conservation Board, there are two candidates there, Kathy Johansson of Harlan and Alan Reinig of Portsmouth. You can see the entire list of township clerk and trustee candidates under the same story on the news page at KJAN.com. Elsewhere in state news, a two-day summit on how to improve life in our small rural towns opens this morning in north central Iowa's Hamilton County. The keynote speaker of Rural That Works Conference is Ben Winchester, a rural sociologist at the University of Minnesota Extension. Winchester says we need to rewrite the rural initiative, or rural narrative, that is. And he said this isn't your grandpa's rural area. We're not all farmers anymore. It is the economy, social life, and demographically, we're very different than we used to be. In decades past, people may recall how all the Main Street storefronts were filled and how primary industries were very apparent in our small towns. Things have changed, he says, but not necessarily for the worst. Winchester says it's easy when you drive up and down Main Street to see the boarded up buildings or where elementary school used to be. But at the same time, our housing stocks are many times filled, our populations continue to migrate in and out, and we get people involved in social life. So we've got a number of folks creating nonprofits around their interests. And while concerns are often raised about the brain drain as high school graduates move away, Winchester says some rural areas are seeing a brain gain as young to middle-aged professionals move in. Winchester speaks at noon today at the Backcountry Winery in Stratford. Other meetings are taking place at the Jewel Golf and Country Club. You can find out more on the web at www.ruralthatworks.com. An outdoor equipment maker plans to start work this fall on expanding its distribution center in a Des Moines suburb. The Toro Company says the $11 million expansion at its Ankeny Distribution Center will let it increase the amount of equipment the facility can handle. The Ankeny City Council on Tuesday agreed to provide Toro with more than $1 million in financial assistance. The project will create at least three new jobs at the facility. Toro expects to complete construction sometime next year. A state auditor has released a report about corrective action that had to be taken to properly track the Iowa Communications Network. The network's previous executive director was fired this past July after a whistleblower, and the agency came forward with concerns. State Auditor Mary Mosman served on the ICN's board, but she and other board members told legislators that the network's manager kept them in the dark about things like raises for unqualified staff and his use of state-owned car to commute back and forth from Des Moines and Marion. He also tried to sell state-owned equipment on eBay. The state auditor's latest report covers the final year the dismissed executive director was still in charge. The new manager of the ICN has promised to maintain a detailed, up-to-date list of the network's assets. The auditor's reports also made note of tardy deposits, late deposits on credit cards or late payments it is on credit cards, and missing timesheets for some network employees who had worked for the previous manager, all things the new ICN management acknowledged and said had been addressed. Well, the city of Cedar Rapids is bracing for flooding after heavy days of rain. The Cedar River is forecast to crest at 16.5 feet today, which is 6 inches above the major flood stage. City workers have been closing parks, boats, and roads, and boat ramps that isn't roads. Cedar Rapids Public Works Director Jen Winter says any impacts would likely come from the river flowing into the storm sewer system.
Unless something fails, we anticipate that there would not be damage. In some cases, depending on the age of a building, some people do sometimes get water in their basements despite the fact that we have kind of plugged off the river from backing up.
While the forecast is for 16.5 feet, city workers are preparing for at least 18 feet of water just to be safe. Winter said they're also plugging manholes and storm drains to prevent backflow.
The majority of the risk is from underground, so the majority of the risk is from water coming back into our storm sewer system and backing up.
City leaders are encouraging residents and, in fact, urging them to stay away from the river and let workers finish their preparations. As updated forecasts become available, the city will consider adding more protections. Cedar Rapids' last major flood came in 2016 when the river crested at 22 feet. That's a check of the news on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.